Jocelyn Bates, and my title is Cultivator of Curiosity and Creativity in the Human Experiment.
So could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. I am an artist and a storyteller and a writer, and I work in the Akashic Records, and I'm a soul art guide and a yoga nidra guide and expressive art therapist, intermodal. I do a lot. But in the end, when I look for the thread of what I do and how I maneuver all of these things that I do, it's really about making people or helping people gain curiosity in their life and creativity and expressing, letting their soul express, finding the wisdom that's innate inside of them in the human experiment. And in doing so, it also requires a little bit of being present in the body, because the body is the channel of, you know, all of that. So, yeah, I don't know if I gave you a good answer for that.
Well, could you tell me a little bit about your own mental health journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually ended up being an expressive art therapist, but I never wanted to be a therapist for like the really longest time, right? I didn't want to be a therapist. I actually ended up going to school for therapy because I didn't want to go to a regular college. I wanted to go where I could at least express myself, and our classes were like sitting on the ground, right, in a circle. And then there's the saying, you know, a lot of therapists end up in therapy to heal themselves. Right? Like I think life sent me there to learn and to heal. And so I actually, during that time, I would say I have about 7 years of my life that I don't remember, my very first 7 years that I don't remember. My parents had switched houses. And that's when I remember everything, like when we moved. And I never knew why I did any. I thought it was normal not to have any memories, but apparently it's not very normal. There's a lot of people have memories, at least one or two memories, right, from that time. And I had a very, very volatile teenage years in being in that, like I was in a domestic violence relationship for 5 years when I was 15. I just had a lot of emotion and a lot of maybe rebellion and even like and against myself as well as others. Like it wasn't just the rebellion against authority or anything. It was against myself too. And it was very, I didn't have a place. So I ended up in therapy school and being an expressive art therapist intermodal, I started working with sexual assault in teenage girls, and I started working with domestic violence. And I realized then that I had a bit of trauma in my life that I had, maybe erased the chalkboard of, and that was why I didn't have a lot of my memories. And it's because, you know, it's like, I don't know if you've noticed when people with Tourette's, when they tick, you know, if you get a few people in a room that have Tourette's, their tics will tick off each other. It's almost like a domino effect in a lot of ways. It's not across, but if you have a conference room of people who are ticking, oftentimes those tics will begin to go around the room. And it's very similar with flashbacks, with violence and sexual assault and that kind of thing. So I started to have flashbacks while I was in school, in college, learning how to be an expressive art therapist, working with sexual trauma in teenage girls. And so it was then that I think I started to, you know, unravel some of like, who am I and what is going on? Right? And I healed a lot of that. I worked through a lot of that. So that was like part of my mental health journey right there. And then I had kids and I did, you know, went into my life as an unschooling mom. And I lived with my parents who supported us in very many ways. And then in September of 2021, my parents died 7 days apart unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And that threw another roadblock, I think, in my mental health in a lot of ways. Like that, I completely, when that happened, and it was such an awful experience. It was like during the time of COVID, because it was 2021, there were so many, there were so many I'm going to put in my quotes, protocols, right? There were so many things going on. And so my level of shock was off the charts. And so I I really dissociated. I completely dissociated. Although I had the skills of being an expressive art therapist where every day I wrote and I drew and I did art every day. So I did have some level of expression, but I don't remember making any of it. And I honestly, like, I can look back and see the journals, but I don't resonate with like what was happening when I did it. And it wasn't until, I'd say, let's see, my parents died early September. And it wasn't until like the end of January that I started to come out. And I started to do meditation and I started to do cold plunges and I started to actively engage again my art and my writing. And I started to actively get curious and creative with what was going on. And I just actually explained it to someone earlier today. It was almost like I was making my home of my body safe to experience the trauma, to heal it a little more. And it was very slow steps. And, you know, grief, that kind of level of grief is, you don't ever fully like come back to who you were. You're completely changed. And you're always dealing with it. And at this point, I'm like, I actually invite the sadness to come in sometimes because I invite the longing for my parents to come in, and I don't mind it at all when it comes. At this point, I feel into it, and it's almost like it's just a huge release of some of the things that get stuck. So that's part of my mental health journey, and I'm still on that journey of grief right now. And grief is not new to me. This was a new one, losing my parents 7 days apart and not being able to advocate or anything like that. I'd had a stillbirth. I'd lost many friends. In fact, I was in the middle of writing a book on grief. And about 3 weeks before my parents died, I called my friend up and I was like, hey, this grief thing, this sucks. If I ever lost my parents, I wouldn't make it through this. And 3 weeks later, both of my parents died. So it was really like, I have been in this world of mental health and like really being open to it and being curious with it and being creative with it my whole life, you know. Did that answer your question? That was like a long
yes, no, which that brings me up to a question of I live with a bipolar disorder too, and I have treatment, I take medicine and do therapy, but I'm always curious about other types of therapy that helps. So how does artistic therapy help people?
Well, so there's all different, there's so many things, first of all, that can help. Like, for me, the first thing I would say is a relationship with your body. I mean, that the body is the conduit of everything. So in anything you're dealing with, whether it's something like bipolar, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's, you know, whatever it is along the lines of any mental health, the first thing I think we have to start to look at is the body. It's our body. We have to listen to it. We have to develop a relationship, respect it, and hone in on that relationship with our body and balancing of the nervous system. Because oftentimes when we have mental illness, like the nervous system is all out of whack. And it's not our fault. It's really not. It's like partly the environment, the culture, everything that's going on, families, like the stress that we live in this world. You know, we have to get a place. We have to go to find a place where, we can balance our nervous system. And I think that's where it all starts. So that's why I think meditation pulled me out originally from all that grief. You know, that place of like, okay, I'm back in my body. I'm back slowly creating a safe environment in my body to live in. And so that is the first thing I would say. I was never taught that in therapy school, ever. It took my own path to find that. And there's so many simple ways to learn to balance your nervous system, you know, like a physiological sigh, elongated exhale, doing mindfulness techniques, even just, you know, looking around a room and finding certain things will bring you into the present moment. And those simple things, like, they don't teach that in therapy school. I don't know why they don't do that, but that would be the first thing I would say. Then I would say, what therapy does in arts there, I was an arts therapist, expressive arts therapist intermodal, which means I would start in one art form. So I might, you know, a lot of things that's easy is markers and paper. Anyone can kind of pick up a marker and just doodle, right? So that's a lot of times where you might start with somebody. And as they're doodling, as they're moving through and you're talking, maybe it's opening up a space to talk or just to develop some kind of relationship here. Then there might be something that they see in their, you know, doodle, and it might have words that come with it. You might then take that that piece of artwork and create a poem. Or maybe that artwork reminds someone of like an Eminem song, and that Eminem song, let's look at the chorus and let's change it up so it meets your where you are right now. Like, and every time you switch from one to the other, from one art form to the next, that is the intermodal shift. And that place is where the healing and expressive art therapy intermodal lies. Every time you shift from one art form to the next, you transform the experience. That's where you begin the transformation, the transformational healing in yourself. So that's where arts therapy is. And arts therapy intermodal, expressive arts therapy intermodal, I think not everybody has words for what we're going through. And I think a lot of times our words, you can ask anyone who's been through English class, we have so many criticisms about words, what words to use. You ever go on like social media and everyone gets on someone because they didn't put an apostrophe between the W-E and the R-E of we're or something, you know? Like there's so many judgments and rules and criticisms about words and how we use them that sometimes it's hard for someone to just say and talk and use the words up front and to begin with. So sometimes an art form, a movement, a piece of music, oftentimes when I was working in the therapy world, I would have someone bring in like their fave. They didn't really, if they weren't feeling comfortable, bring in your favorite song. Like, let's listen to your favorite song. And then that would open up the conversation. You know, it's like sometimes we just don't have the words because it really, words live in the mind. Right? Like, and it's where we're, you know, we're making all the, that's where we make the excuses. That's where our inner critic lies. That's where all of our conditioning lies. So I think expressive arts therapy has a beautiful piece to it in that you can, you don't have to use the words. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I get that with talk therapy. Sometimes I can't think of what to say at the moment, even though, you know, emotion stuff are going on.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so, like, I think arts therapy holds a very special place for that kind of work. And I think it's also, like, it's not just for kids. It's not just for teens. It does, I think, work incredibly well with teenagers and kids. But, like, it works for adults as well. In the intermodal shift in expressive art therapy, you can also run between theater and visual art and music and drumming. And you can kind of go where you kind of follow the person you're working with. But yeah, every time you shift it from, it's like every time you shift from one art form to the next, it's like you get a little bit more information. You're actually changing and shifting the reality of what you've created, which came from you. So in a little bit of a way, you're changing you. Yeah.
And with working with, you know, kids, teens, and adults, do you see their confidence level rise as they go through the process?
Oh, yeah. I think it's really fun to watch people when they've shifted from one modality to another a few times to see, like, it opens up a possibility or it widens the door. You know, it widens what you're able to, like, you're like, oh my God, I created that and I didn't even mean to. Like, because you may have started with a simple, like, doodle from your day, and all of a sudden you're, like, writing a song or you're, like, choreographing something or, you know, whatever it be for yourself. And so I think like that really builds a confidence. And I'll tell you, like, I also do soul art, which is not therapy, but it absolutely it has everything to do with like the inner wisdom and the inner your soul and higher self speaking through you. And in that, I find a soul art journey has different stages. And one of the stages is creative expression. It's very similar to expressive art therapy in many ways, but it's not the same thing. And in creative expression, when I do it with a lot of adults, I find that by the end of the creative expression stage, like, people, they don't want to stop. They don't want to stop creating because it's like they don't ever get this opportunity to just play and be joyful and dance and sing and whatever they're doing and paint and just be present in a moment. We're not allowed to do that as adults. You know, I mean, it's like we're allowed to do it, but there's lots of people who are like, what is she doing?
Yes. Get a lot of look. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a confidence that comes when you allow yourself to play and to just be yourself. Anytime you can have a glimmer or a moment of like allowing your soul to like really be present, you're going to gain confidence because that's part of who you are, you know?
And when I was looking at your website, you do talk a lot about what's good for the soul and all that. How did you come up with that?
Well, I grew up very spiritual my whole life. My mom and dad were very spiritual. My mom was like a Feldenkrais practitioner and aromatherapist, and she channeled angels. My dad, like, you know, he definitely was visited by his mom many times, who had died before I was born. I grew up in a household that was super holistic. Like, there was no sugar. There was, like, when I had a headache, it was peppermint oil on the temples, you know. Like, that's how I grew up. So I've always been in that place. My mom used to take me years ago just to the crystal store, and she would like bring a bag for me, and I could fill it with everything that felt right. She'd have me put my hand over all the crystals, and whatever one resonates and vibrates for you, I could put in a bag and take home. You know, like, this is how I grew up. So the soul is not a new concept for me, but it was interesting because being an expressive art therapist, you don't get to bring the soul in. Because as a therapist, you're not bringing the higher self in. You're trying to work with the person in front of you, and it may not be that they're open to that kind of language, or it may be that the institute you work for or the thing isn't open to the language of the soul or the higher self. Whereas when I work in soul art, it's absolute. I'm speaking about inner wisdom, about the inner child, about your soul, about your highest aligned energy, about why you're here. We are a soul in a human body, and I don't mince words. Like, I don't mince words. And it's just, I feel like what the soul art is, like, expressive art therapy was preparing me for it. It was like, okay, now here's all the science behind all of this, right? You can, and go practice it, go have fun with it. And here's all the science, right? But it was like preparing me for the day that I would start working in soul art and be able to, like, really, so I am grounded in understanding how the arts work and how everything happens, how it heals, how it transforms. But now I also have this beautiful kind of like spiraling down of the soul wisdom and the highest aligned energy coming down into me as I work. So it's interesting. I've always had the soul connection. But I also work in soul shamanism. So I go on shaman journeys as well. A soul art journey is very similar to a shaman journey. Your energy goes into the journey. You're going throughout this, and then your energy comes back at the end to create the transformations. So, I mean, I've just, it's nothing new to me. I didn't have anything to learn there. I think I've just always innately felt like the connection to the soul is a really important thing. Now, in my teens, when I was in these, you know, relationships, I lost myself for quite some time. And it took me, I would say, at least a decade and a half to find myself again. So, I mean, you know, it's not like it's a constant thing. We are all fallible. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
How does helping others help your own healing process?
Well, I think whenever we can witness another's healing, and that's an honor. That's an honor to witness somebody else coming to a moment of insight, an aha, a transformation, to witness that. I think it feeds our hearts and our souls. Because not only does it help with, like, you can, you know, mirror and reflect for someone, and you still get that energy back, right? You're still, like, if you can experience it, someone else going through a transformation, there's a piece of you that's transformed. But also the idea that, so when I work in records or I work in soul art journeys, whenever I set up a journey or I'm setting up going into someone's records, I am also getting healed on an energetic level. When I'm in somebody's records, like, I am in a space that energetically heals me. When I'm in a soul art journey, I set up my space, I use Palo Santo, I'm in there, I'm like creating a sacred space that also heals me in that time. So, you know, not only is it like to be able to witness, to be able to hold somebody through a journey, to be able to guide them, but also like being in the space with them as well. And I will say, I don't actually do this work to heal people. I do it so people can heal themselves. And that, witnessing that, is like really beautiful. So, yeah.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
Oh, I have so everything that I do for other people. So like I record yoga nidras for Insight Timer. I run soul art journeys. I go into people's Akashic records. I read people's human design charts. Everything that I do, I do on myself. I'm constantly in a soul art journey. Right now I'm getting ready to start a new one because Soul Art Day is in a few days. And I just finished doing a big deep dive into some of my gene keys in human design. I'm constantly working. I also have a daily practice of meditation. I do cold plunges and meditation every day. And I have a writing practice as well. So I definitely have like a journaling practice. Even though it sounds like a lot that I just said, it only takes less than like probably 45 minutes a day. It's not actually that long. It's like I might write for 15 minutes, meditate for 20, and take a cold plunge. Like and then the rest of the stuff is, you know, in and out of my day. I feel like also my kids heal me a bit, you know, especially with the grief, because like I was an only child and my kids experienced it too. And I think sometimes like when my 7-year-old comes to me and she cries or I'm crying and she says, it's okay to cry. Can I cry with you? Like that's healing. That's when you as an adult, here I am a 47-year-old woman. And I'm like, I'm having a bad day and I'm crying from the grief. My 7-year-old daughter comes up to me and says, can I cry with you? And then she begins to cry. Like that's the most healing thing I think I've ever felt. So it's like, you know, it's the whole environment around me.
What is it about meditation that helps mental health?
So meditation, and there's lots of different meditations. It's like you could do like a guided visualization meditation or a yoga nidra meditation. I did, when I first came out of grief, I did transcendental meditation, but in that you have to go get your mantra from a center. I think the beautiful thing with mental health, and it's just like what we started talking about, the body. When we can be quiet in the body, when we can be present in the body, and that's what meditation does. It brings us to a present moment, right? When we can do that, we're developing a relationship with our body, and we are allowing our nervous system to balance if we're doing breathing, right? Meditation for me, and especially transcendental meditation, which isn't really guided visualization, it's really just literally 20 minutes, right? I feel like what it does is it just gives me a touchstone. It gives me a touchstone for my day. And I know I can go back there if things get crazy, if I start to get anxious, right? I know I can go back there and I can go have another 20 minutes and I'll be set again. I have a touchstone. The other thing with meditation is that if you do meditation for a while, you start to learn how to, I want to say non-attach. I don't know if that's a word. Non-attach from your inner critic, from your inner, you know, voice that's up here judging things and telling and saying certain things. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not doing right. All of that. You learn how to get like detach. That's the word. To detach from that in your meditation. So, yeah. Also, EFT can be very helpful with mental issues. EFT, where you're tapping on the points and using mantras or words from your own self. Tapping can be super helpful with balancing the nervous system and also working into like whatever issues you're having mentally. Yeah.
You work with, you know, all kids, adults and all that. Have you seen the stigma of just talking about mental health lessening, especially in younger people?
Oh, just the openness the openness of talking about mental health? No, actually, I would not be the right one to ask because I am one of those people that everyone tells me their life story. Like I go and I drop my kids off at the School of Rock where they take lessons and I know every teenager's story there because they've all pulled me aside at one point or another. And they know I'm an artist. They don't necessarily know I'm a therapist. I'm not really working actively in that right now. So, but they all just open up to me. They like to tell me things. So I wouldn't know. I mean, people often I am a very non-judgmental person. Very open, and like I'm always like, oh yeah, like I'll accept whatever people say, and I'll just like reflect it back or witness it, and I hear people talking about mental health all the time. I feel like though there has been, I don't know if this is actually true, but I feel like there's been a lot of suicide stuff lately going on. I feel like there's been a lot of young teenage suicide and even older people suicide, like even people who are older in their 40s and 50s. And I think this is like, it's becoming more open in, I don't know if they're just like reporting on it more or if it's always been like this, but I have noticed that. And I have noticed a bit of when people talk about it, like there's almost a, I don't know if it's a shame, I don't know what it is, but like there's this attachment to a negative feeling about, not negative, like I miss that person, but oh, that they were, you know, negative, like, why would they do that? Why would, you know, this kind of talk instead of the actual talk that could make it better. You're going to make something better that someone committed suicide, but could help the whole situation of so many people committing suicide. But that's an interesting, I feel like I've seen that more. Have you seen that more? I don't know if it's actually more so.
No, that is true. You see a lot more. And I worked in local TV for a long time and we wouldn't report on suicide at all, but now I'm seeing a lot more,
many, and it's like, and there's details, and I'm like, I'm not used to details in that, and so it's like I'm not sure if it's just that they're reporting more, or I mean, because I experienced my first person that I a friend that died committed suicide when I was in high school, when I was a freshman, so like I for me it's been in my life, but I just don't remember them reporting. Maybe it was more taboo back then, and now they're just talking and trying to hash it all out, trying to kind of.
Well, I think that's the big thing. Now, you got to talk about it because it is with all ages, it's just getting worse.
Yeah. And I imagine as like the economy shifts and stuff, that's going to not help the matters either. Yeah. But that's something that I see a lot more talk about. Yeah.
Where do you want to see your mission of helping others in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I'm hoping to that book that I was telling you about. Yeah. I never finished it because my parents died. I am hoping to actually scrap the original and start a new book in the next year about grief. So that I feel like grief is something like that loss, that place where your heart breaks so much that you don't know if you're going to make it. In those moments, there is a huge, to me, portal that opens up, and it is a gift. And it's really weird to say that because you have to just take it from the point of view that person's not coming back. So what am I going to do with this? I might as well make it into something. And you can really change and shift your life in beautiful ways if you can like take those moments. And so I would like to write a book that kind of focuses on that. And then, and then just start to speak to that because there's so much grief, and it's such a taboo subject. You know, people talk about people dying, even like suicide. You know, people will be there for the first beginning, right? But then as time goes by, people forget, and it becomes this subject where it's like, oh, you're not better yet, or oh, you're not doing this yet, or oh, you're not, you know, and it's hard. It's just really hard. So if we can take those moments when our hearts are cracked open, and when I say grief, it doesn't have to be death. It could be like the loss of a job, the moving from one town to another even, right? In these moments where we feel completely broken, we can find major gifts in that, major gifts, major life transformations. And so I'd like to help people with that. I really would like to open that conversation up for everyone.
How can people reach out to you and learn more?
Yeah, I have a website, jocelynbates.net, and I have everything there. I also have an insight timer. You're talking about how does meditation help? My insight timer, because insight timer is free, and a lot of my meditations on there are free. And so I do have, in times of stress, how to use the physiological sigh, walking you through it. And you can always like bookmark that. But I do it on the way into the dentist because I can't stand dentists. So whatever it is for you that you might need that for, I have those for free on my Insight Timer. I also run lives there sometimes for people. And I have a Substack that talks about my grief journey and how I'm using soul art as a way to really continue my grief journey and continue my transformations through it. So you can find me in those places.